Hello, hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Putting It Together. I'm into the first week of rehearsals now for McGonagall's Chronicles, which is going to be on at the Oran Mór in Glasgow in just under 2 weeks. So we open on Monday the 26th of March, and it's terrific to be back in a room with my pal Gary McNair, who's written this new play, who is actually on a very early episode of Pit Pod. You can hear him if you look back in the archives. And Joe Douglas, this is our third show together in the space of a year. He's directing the play. And he's someone, you never know, you might just hear on Pit Pod sometime in the near future. That's all I'll say. And not just them, the amazing Simon Liddell, who's writing and performing the music with me. He's writing it and we're performing it together. Which is great. It gives me a wee break from actually coming up with the music. And then this amazing challenge of playing music that is in a different style to what I'm used to. And he's got this amazing, unique sort of indie folk style, and it's just beautiful, and his mind works in a completely different way to mine, which is refreshing and great. So I'm excited about that. It's different from anything I've ever done, which I always like. And we're on day three, so, you know, for an hour and more rehearsal period, that's a quarter of it gone, because you only get 2 weeks. But we get to do it, not just in Glasgow, but in Edinburgh and Dundee as well, so it's not a bad wee run, and we're having a lot of fun with rhyming couplets, let me just say that. My guest this week is Don Sivright, the actor who is currently appearing in the National Theatre's production of Pinocchio, directed by John Tiffany, and it's not her first time at the National. She's been in with the National Theatre of Scotland. She was in Glasgow Girls, but also Our Ladies of Perpetual Succour, which went both to the National Theatre of Scotland and of Great Britain and the West End, and she really does have a string of interesting jobs to talk about, which is tremendous. She's had a great run recently, particularly, and we had a good old chat. She's Glasgow through and through, as Dawn, which is fantastic. She's representing us down there, and she's had some tremendous experiences. So I'm very glad that she took a wee bit of time out of her a week off, which disappears pretty quickly if you have to go to a different city, to come and sit in the studio with me here and chat away. It was great. So I won't hold you up. I want you to hear it. So this is me and Don Sivright, and we are Putting It Together.
You just don't think you're like experiences are going to be exciting for folk to listen to.
Yeah, yeah. You hear other people and you think, of course anyone wants to hear
that.
Yeah,
like, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I'm quite similar, and then you're like, oh, but mine's isn't as exciting as that. So
it's not as exciting to you because you've been in it the whole time.
Exactly.
You've never had a break from it.
That's a really good opener for listening to myself speak for 45 minutes to an hour, so I can't wait.
Which set it up, so it's going to be really good.
It's going to be a rocking hour.
So you are from Glasgow.
Mm-hmm.
What about your parents? They're from here too?
Yes, my mum is, both Glaswegian. Both from Glaswegian working class families.
And are they involved in any kind of arts stuff?
Yes, my mum is a dancer. She used to dance professionally.
Oh, right.
And then turned to teaching.
Right.
She got like a blood clot in her leg and it took her out of dancing.
Oh, no
just
way.
Before she reached professional dancing, but she like danced amateurly, that's not a word.
It's not, but I think
amateur level.
Yes.
For the country and all over the world.
Oh, right, like competitive stuff.
Yeah, ballroom and Latin, she is hands down, if she listens to this, she's one of the best dancers I've ever seen.
Wow.
But she teaches now, and she taught me. And then she quickly stopped teaching children after teaching me.
You were the end point.
I was the end, I think. She used to really love it, and then having me in her classes was just an absolute nightmare. But she teaches adults now.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad actually met her when he was a Sparky at high school, and he was a sound engineer for
right.
bands.
Oh,
so
okay.
My dad now owns his own company, and he does sound and lighting and set and mm-hmm. design and all that. So I kind of, not like massively theatre, but
yeah.
music, you know, sound and all that stuff. And obviously movement is a big part of where I started.
Yeah.
Started dancing at my mum's dance. She didn't have a school, but she took classes.
Right, right.
And then, yeah, it was kind of from there. I didn't really like doing any like drama and stuff at school, high school and anything.
So you had drama at high school, but you weren't into it? Or?
I didn't do drama at normal high school. I went to Thomas Muir and Bishop Briggs, and I actually did loads of sport. I was mega into sport.
Oh, right.
wanted to play football and netball and hockey and all that. And I was a little bit naughty at school, so I didn't really think it was the right place for me. I didn't take music. I took art, but right. I didn't ever learn to play any instruments or sing, really. And then I was quite naughty, so the music teacher was like, come to the choir. Right. And like put your energy into the choir. And I was like, not a chance, not interested. And then
I can somehow believe that story about you being quite naughty.
It was bad, yeah. I was bad. I just didn't really, I still don't really like being told what to do.
I can imagine.
Which is probably quite difficult being an actress, like working with other folk and
being told what to do.
That's it. Always just a little bit in the back of me. I'm like, no, my way's the best way. I just think that, what, I don't know, I can't even remember that far back. Like, I just decided that I'll see what I can do. I'll go to this choir and I'll be great at this choir. I can go in and just smash it and do whatever. And then I went to the choir and I was like, I actually quite like this. Right. She's quite good. And then my teacher was called Mrs. Dickey, Hilary Dickey. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I want you to play Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz.
Hey.
This was in fourth year.
Right.
And The Wizard of Oz is hands down, any of my friends and my family know this, it's my favourite film of all time. I was obsessed with it growing up. Mm-hmm. My granddad used to sit me in front of all those old school musicals, and that's where I kind of got my love for, in the back of my mind, those musicals, like Meet Me in St. Louis and, mm-hmm. you know, Singing in the Rain and all that. And I thought, I would love to play Dorothy with this like gravelly voice.
I'd love to play Dorothy.
And I just was like, it's like my dream come true. I made my own ruby slippers.
For the show?
Shoes. I made them, like, put the glitter on them and was like, yes, this is amazing. And then did that, and Hilary, I didn't realise, is married to a guy called Graham Dickey, who mm-hmm. runs the Dance School of Scotland in Knightswood.
Right.
So he came to see my play when I was in fourth year, and I was tiny. And I went back into the choir, like, the week later, and she was like, here's a registration form. You're going to audition for Knightswood. To go to the Dance School of Scotland.
You were headhunted.
Well, kind of. She's probably just like, what are you going to do in the world? Like, you end up in jail after 3 years.
Shove her at Knightswood. Exactly. Maybe that'll save the world from her.
Yes, exactly. So then I auditioned for that and then got in.
Right. So you did fifth and sixth year of kind of normal school there, plus all the dancing and whatnot.
Aye. There was like, at the time, they do amazing courses now up from second year and third year now. But at the time I went, I just remember turning up to this audition. And they auditioned hundreds and hundreds of kids from all over Scotland.
Right.
Which is amazing. And because it was the only fully funded course at that time.
Right.
It is an amazing place. Like, I wouldn't be where I am now without that school. Mm-hmm. But there was only 12 of us that got in.
Right.
So it's like, it's really, really special place to be. Like, yeah. I loved it. But I turned up to the audition in like a tracksuit being like, what's happening here? What's going on?
I'm for the choir.
And there's people like properly posh kids that had been training in ballet for a long time and training on all singing and everything, and I'd never ever done ballet, tap, jazz, modern acting lessons, none of that. My bass was like doing Latin and ballroom dancing, so it was quite expressive and passionate, but like getting told what to do and specifically and kind of doing ballet and all that wasn't,
so it's more restrained, that whole world, isn't it?
Just harder thing to do, and I just kind of got thrown into this audition and I was like, oh yeah, this is fun. And then we did like a workshop and I was just my normal self. I was a teenager. I was worse when I was a teenager. It's hard to believe that this is me being restrained.
Like, well, this is you kind of growing up, is it?
Growing up and knowing better. But like, back then I literally just walked into the workshop and literally would not let anybody else speak. I was like, nick, nick, nick. What I've got to say is brilliant. I've got an idea. Let's do this. So yeah, and then went there and learned everything I needed to know about musical theatre and acting and dancing and all that.
So 2 years there, and but there's a kind of, I was going to ask you about this choir. You realised that you liked it and all that stuff, but did you still pretend that you didn't? Like, pretend you didn't care and stuff like that? Was that you?
A little bit. Like, I wasn't like a bam at school. I was just a bit cheeky. Like, I just said what I thought and argued a wee bit with teachers and I was kind of bored because I knew that I didn't want to be a lawyer or a doctor or a vet or a mortgage broker. Like, I knew I didn't want to do any of those things, but I didn't quite know what I wanted to do. I knew that I liked being in the spotlight. I knew I liked people looking at me.
Yeah.
I knew I liked doing things, expressive things like art and sport and all that, but I just didn't quite know what that was. So when I started going to music, the reason why I didn't take music in the first place was because I thought it was naff. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want to sit in front of a piano and learn my arpeggios and all that. I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go out and play football and push people over and shout and scream. So yeah, when I started the choir, it was a bit like, yeah, I do go to the choir. Like when all my pals were off doing netball and all that, I was like, all right, well, I need to go to the choir and sing this. And singing at school assemblies, I was even, you know.
Right.
But I quite quickly turned, so that wasn't a long-standing thing. Within a couple of weeks, I was like, this is awesome, because I'm doing it.
Fully in it.
And I feel like I'm good at this and I could get better.
Mm-hmm.
And then it completely opened up a complete new world for me with like acting and scripts and doing all those things and drama.
Mm-hmm. So you come out of Knightswood and you're just like all those other people now, surely, with your tap shoes and you've done the ballet and all that.
Not really.
No.
They tried to squeeze me into that box, but they very, very quickly knew that I wasn't going to be, and still I'm not now, that kind of mainstream musical theatre triple threat. Like, I love dancing, I love singing, I love acting, I love all those things, but I'm not typical musical theatre trained twirly. Yeah.
Do you think that served you well, though?
It has now.
Mm-hmm.
There was a long time when I came out and went to drama school to Guildford. I trained at GSA.
Right.
And I was 17 when I went there. They took me early because my birthday's in September, so I was like, oh, I didn't turn 18 until I got there.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And, I was made to feel for quite a long time that I didn't fit in and I wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
I had an operation on my throat when I was 17, 18,
mm-hmm.
Like on my voice, because it was a little bit gravelly, as you can hear, it's kind of husky tones. And I felt like they were trying to make me into something that I definitely wasn't, and I was trying to fit into that. So because I wasn't a soprano, or because I wasn't this beautifully skinny girl that could kick my height, I spent quite a long time. I mean, I hid it quite well, like, and I did really well at drama school and I loved it there, and it was 3 years that I was really, really helpful for me, and I kind of just grown up, I think. Like, the training was great,
but it's sometimes just that.
It's just being those,
that time, isn't it?
Coming out at 21 and figuring out who you are and doing what you're doing. And I made some amazing friends and had some great teachers, some not great teachers.
Yeah.
But I really battled with it for a good couple of years going, why are they trying to make me something that I'm not? And am I ever going to work? Like, I'm going to come out of here, and because I can't be Cosette and Les Mis, I'm going to fail, and just nobody's going to want to employ me.
Because you're given that sense, maybe at that drama school, that if you don't do this version of things, then there isn't anything for you.
Especially at that time, like, I went to drama school, I graduated like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. God, that makes me feel really old. But at that time, mainstream musical theatre was really popular. So, like, you're talking about the Wicked had just come out.
Yeah.
You know, Les Mis was still really, it still is at its prime, but, like, everybody wanted to be in Phantom of the Opera. Everybody wanted to be in the next, you know, classical musical, Oklahoma, all that. And I was like, I don't fit that.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't fit that. And then quite quickly, I was really lucky. I did, like, got signed by an agent at the end of my second year, and I started auditioning for things in my third year, and I'm going to auditions for all these Sound of Music and Carousel. I'm standing in a stage in the West End in a theatre in front of David Grimrod at the age of 20 going, why am I here? This is ridiculous. So it was really like, it was quite a difficult thing for me to process at that time.
Yeah.
I didn't really see how, if there were any other strands or any ways I could go. I thought, this is it. I need to do this until somebody employs me.
Keep battering away at it kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you auditioned for that whole third year and any bites?
I got quite close to a couple of things.
Right. Like Recall for down the road.
Oh yeah, last couple for some big things. I was really, really close to getting a really, really big musical that I really wanted to do, and I'm still like in my heart of hearts want to play this part, so maybe just a couple of years.
And you're not going to tell us what it is?
Nancy and Oliver.
Oh yeah, you need to be a bit older.
A bit older,
but perfect.
Oh no, I was 20. I was like, I can do that.
I can show
you like violence and abuse and emotion. I've got it all.
I'm from Glasgow.
This is me.
It's a great part.
It's good, and I kind of think it was really, really good to get all those knockbacks in that time, because hands down, I was really, really young. I thought, I've got an agent, I'm set, I'm not even going to do my last third year, like, I'm gone.
Yeah.
And I didn't, and I think that was really good for me to go out and to, you know.
You stuck with it.
Yeah, stuck with it, and after graduating and doing all that, moving into London, going, I think I've got a wee bit of I know the game a wee bit here. So I'm not going to be naive and be like, I'm going to work straight away. I might not work straight away. And I didn't work straight away. It took like a good 6 months, 7 months to get my first job.
But it's not bad.
It's not bad.
Well, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, it could
have been. What
was it? Quadrophenia.
Oh, right.
I did the national tour of Quadrophenia with Pete Townsend.
And oh, nice.
It was amazing, amazing job. Because at the same time, I was auditioning for Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Which my very good friend Louise McCarthy was in. I'm sure she was very, very good. We were actually up for this. She played it a couple of years before me, and I was up for that part that she played. Yeah. So they must have thought, we've had a working class blonde Glaswegian lassie.
We don't need another
and
one.
Maybe this is the second Louise McCarthy. I didn't even know her at the time. So.
Oh, right. Yeah,
very, very funny. But I was auditioning for two really different shows.
Yeah.
And then Quadrophenia, I actually auditioned for like 7 days in a row. So like I went on the Monday, went back on the Tuesday, went back on the Wednesday.
They kept calling you back. Thursday,
and the group got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller.
So it was like a day-long audition except a week.
Pretty much, yeah.
Massive.
And then had the job by like the next week. And wasn't... I don't think it all kind of stemmed on that point, but like... If I'd have decided to go another way, I'm not saying that mainstream musical theatre, because I've done it since, but like, if I had taken another choice and got another job, I'm not quite sure if I'd be where I am.
Well, of course you wouldn't.
Because of that.
Yeah.
So it was an amazing job. It was 10 months. It was rock. I was able to express myself in the way I wanted to express myself. I was different. It was the kind of singing I wanted to do. It was we made it ourselves, you know, it was original.
Right, okay. So you were involved in the creation of it?
Totally involved.
Oh, amazing.
And getting to work with Pete Townsend is like one of the most amazing things in the world. And getting to work with a band, a full rock band and all that, it's just like, I'm very, very lucky that that was my first job.
And 10 months for a first job is nice too.
It's so nice.
Get stuck in, you know.
And to go to like every number one theatre in the UK.
Done that
so
proper circuit.
Did all the cities, and I was like, ah, so this is UK. This is this is what Newcastle's like. This is what Wales is like. This is what Inverness is like. And people want to travel, even though it's not mega, mega traveling. But
yeah, but you don't see it otherwise. Why would you?
Exactly.
Why would you?
Definitely
go to
don't
Newcastle?
Get paid to see it.
No, that's true. So then, did you have to readjust when you finished that and go back to the kind of the waiting game and all that stuff?
What did I do? Yeah, I came back.
You're still living in London at this
still
point,
living in
or
London.
Based there? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what did I do? Did I go straight into... I did a couple of plays, a couple of play readings and stuff like that, just like kind of kicking about. And then I think, was the second job that I did Legally Blonde?
Oh, you did Legally Blonde?
Yes.
Ah.
So I did that for a year in the West End. Which is completely different to Quadrophenia.
It would be about as different as you could get.
And that was one of those places that I was like, wow, this is really mainstream. This is commercial. But it fit me. Like, I played a really cute little part in it. Like, I played the geek best friend, and like, I got my own little section, and I was like, this is funky. I like this.
Was that the original company of it?
The second company. I did the recast. Getting to work with... That was the time when I went into the West End and started working with, like... people off the telly and doing loads of rehearsals and being in work every day, rehearsing someone new in and working really, really hard.
Yeah.
And doing that year commercial contract in London. It's full on. Each was a week, full time. And it was amazing. I loved it. Every minute of it. And I think that having the luck of that being the kind of only West End commercial musical that I've done is amazing. Because... If it had been something else again, I would have been, you know, I left on a high going, I've ticked that off the list, and that's an amazing thing. But I ticked it off the list and quite quickly was like, I'm not going to do that again.
Oh, really? So you loved it, but you said at the end of it, that'll do.
Yeah, like,
for that.
I could have had the option to stay on, and I was like, I'm not going to do this because it's a lifestyle. I've got a lot of friends that, you know, show hop and make a living out of doing amazing musicals and working on a year-to-year basis with paid holiday and doing 8 shows a week and working that hard. But when I finished, it was like just something in me was like, I don't want to do this again. I don't want to go into another year-long contract. I don't want to do, you probably hear this quite a lot, but like we call it Fanny on Five. excuse my language, in the West End, because everything's on a grid. Yeah, so it starts in the middle and zero and then goes out to 10. And you've got to stand on that specific number.
Yeah.
Your face facing that specific way.
Yeah.
And you've got to say it that specific way. And I very quickly was like, this is no for me.
Mm, yeah, I do hear that a lot.
I can imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't like, I'm done with this. You know, I've made my mark on the West End. I was just like, that's an awesome gig.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I love that. Now I want to go and do something, make something my own again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Totally different experience.
Totally different experience.
Did you do the whole, did you get into the whole thing, like hanging out in the Groucho and having fancy dinners here and
maybe
there?
Maybe.
Did you?
Oh, you think you're...
You think you're a
it's
ticket,
it's an amazing
you
place. You don't think you're a ticket, but it's an amazing place to be in. Like, the West End is a very...
Yeah, tremendous.
And it has its ups and downs, and there's nice people, and there's not so nice people. And mm-hmm. But, like, that lifestyle is just... Like, coming out of the Savoy Theatre at 10:30 at night with droves of folk and going, getting on the tube home and seeing everybody sitting reading the programme of the show you're in and saying, not talking about you, but being like, that was great.
I'm part of that, yeah.
But you're being part of it is an amazing thing. And obviously the social life is really great, and the people, it's a community of people that hang out together, and it's great. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. And at the time, I was 21, 22, so it was great for me.
When you were doing that West End thing and that feeling of Fanny on Five thing, which I've never heard before.
You know, you can use that.
Thank you. You were hankering to do something that more creative, that was more your own. Mm-hmm. Did you ever do that during the time, like open mic gigs or writing something? Were you ever tempted?
No, I didn't.
You just went full pelt into the 8 shows a week and said next time.
Yeah, embraced it. Like, I did embrace it, like, got involved in everything that I could creatively, like, that was happening in town at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So musical theatre wise, at that time I was still interested in doing mainstream musical theatre. So at the beginning of the contract, I was like, actually, when I come out of this, I could probably do another year contract doing something else, maybe mm-hmm. going to Les Mis or going to something else. And then when the year ended, I was in a very different place.
Yeah.
So a year's a long time.
Yeah, it's going to change a lot of things, yeah.
Do the same thing every day. And I kind of, at that time, I didn't really have another outlet. I didn't know. I was just getting quite frustrated going,
mm-hmm.
okay, I've managed to get into a commercial musical and I'm not a commercial musical girl, so this is great. But that's not where my heart is.
Yeah.
And also, I kind of ran, this is going to make me seem like such an idiot, but like, I kind of ran from Glasgow, ran away
mm-hmm.
when I was 17. At the time, musical theatre up here wasn't massive, not as massive as it is now. There wasn't a lot of musicals being made that I wanted to involve myself in. So I thought, I've got to go to London, big lights, big city, mm-hmm. do it all. And I kind of was like, out the door, straight out the door.
Right.
But then at the end of Legally Blonde, I was like, I miss Glasgow, I miss Scotland, I miss Scottish people, I miss mm-hmm. being in a room with loads of other Scottish people. You know, I just, there's something in me going, I don't know what I want to do. And I also was like, I actually don't feel like I have to dance and sing all the time. Like, I love dancing and singing, and I've been doing it in every other show since.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to try and explore the other avenues. So I did, quite shortly after doing Legally Blonde, my mate Niall Phillips is a producer, and he put on a play at a tiny little theatre in Angel.
Mm-hmm.
And I auditioned for this play, and it was a hour piece with one woman, and then she was a homeless girl.
Mm-hmm.
And three other actors came in for kind of 10-minute slots into that play, but the whole play was just me talking
mm-hmm.
for an hour. And I got it, obviously, I mean...
Because you're talking about it, you obviously got it.
Oh, God, I just kicked that and smacked myself in the face.
Oh, sorry. Right,
oh,
okay.
No.
It's getting heated.
That's karma. Yeah. That's karma. And I started the play in a sleeping bag on the floor while the audience came in.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we only did like a little 5-day run, mm-hmm. tiny run. And as people were coming in, I was like, what the fuck am I doing here?
Oh, I know that feeling.
I was like, who wants to come and listen to me speak for an hour? I'm not singing. I'm not dancing. There's no jazz hands. I'm in a tiny little studio theatre in Islington about to try and act. And I was like, and I don't think I'm very good at that. And it was a real like point where I was like, fuck, I've made a big decision here. And I loved it.
Yeah, of course.
I fucking loved it. I literally came out of it and I was like, oh, that was pretty intense. And just going out and just being that character, not kind of hiding behind the bells and whistles, just like...
It's more exposing, though.
It's totally exposing.
But isn't there a thing where you're, if you're in the space when the audience are coming in, no matter what the show is, I think it gives you time, you have to be very still, and it gives you time to just go, all the things that could go wrong.
Yeah.
Think. It's thinking time that you just don't need.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did a show where I started asleep in a Santa suit in the basement of the Arches. We did it for 2 or 3 weeks. It was an alternate sort of Christmas show, alternative Christmas show. Mm-hmm. And every night, no matter how, I loved the show. It was hilarious with Gary McNair, who'd written it, and I loved it. Brilliant. And I'd written the music. But every night lying in that thing and hearing people coming in, and you knew that you probably knew some people. It was in Glasgow. And just terror. The thoughts would just go through my mind at such a rate of everything that could go wrong, you know?
That is a really, really amazing experience. I'm so glad I did it.
So it became, despite how you felt at the beginning, you thought, this was really worthwhile and it's totally different to anything you've done before.
And I was playing a character, like, she was working class, homeless. There was a lot of, like, good story stuff happening in the play and I was like, I'm really enjoying this.
You can get your teeth into it.
Get my teeth into it.
Aye.
Still showing off, but just in a different way, you know.
That's what we're doing, obviously. Isn't it? To some extent.
Aye, getting paid to show off. But, yeah, so I did that and then was like, I need to start getting seen for more stuff like this.
Okay, so that lit something in you to continue.
Yeah, and that's when I like started banging at the doors of the National Theatre Scotland.
Aha, I'm back.
Sits and hiya. Mm-hmm. Just been away doing some jetties and stepwell changes doing the West End, but employ me, I'm here.
And how did that work out for you?
No, very well. They don't like that chat up here.
No, it's a different world, yeah.
Completely different world. So amazing that I left and didn't leave, that I went to London and trained and did some work down there, but I thought, well, I'm from Glasgow and there's an amazing scene in Glasgow. I didn't know that when I was younger. That's a really, really kind of ignorant, naive thing to say. Like, when I went, I was like, there's no theatre up here.
You were unaware of it.
I was totally unaware of it.
You just went.
They weren't making, you know, pure musicals.
Yeah, so you can see them.
Yeah, so I came back up and was like, I was living in London and I was like working, teaching dance, teaching kids, doing promo work, being a waitress in the hospital club. It was fine. I was just doing everything and anything I could to get by. Mm-hmm. And then I heard about a show called The Glasgow Girls that was happening.
Ah.
And I was like, at the time, I was like, okay, what is this? I was like, can I be involved in this? Is there a part in it for me? I'm not sure. So I just got on the old email, chatting at Cora Bissett's door.
Did you know her before that?
No.
Oh, okay.
I still make her laugh if she ever listens to this. I was like, I don't know if there's a part in this play for me, but can you see me? And she just did. And she didn't have to, because she didn't have a clue who I was.
Did you say, I've done this, this, and this?
Yeah.
Of course she did.
And, you know, I was just like, I've been doing musicals, and it's that whole actor thing in it. I've done musicals, now I want to be a serious actress.
But it was a musical.
It was a musical.
So in a sense,
but the
that
right kind of musical, it's the totally perfect different kind. I auditioned for it, got it, and then walked up here and worked at the sets. Which
yes,
was
glorious.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Working, you know, for the NTS at the Glue Factory and rehearsing in that space, which was kind of awesome, with some awesome girls making something that meant something. Mm-hmm. First time playing someone who actually existed. The girl that I played, Jennifer, was in the room watching me rehearse.
Yeah, that is an interesting first. I never really thought much about it.
Mm.
Playing someone who exists.
And who isn't that? We're the same age. She's a bit younger than me. But at the time,
there's a realness like that you don't get.
I was sitting talking. My storyline was with my dad, and it was about how hard it was at home and trying to fight for something you believe in that your family might not quite understand. Mm-hmm. And she was there in front of me, like,
having
the whole time.
Haven't
had that experience, and it's great. I mean, that show has gone on to go, has been going for such a long time because it's so relevant right now, and I get it. But it was, like, my first shot at Scottish theatre, my first shot at being in a room with everybody was talking like me, and everybody was just getting tore writing about it. And I was like, this is where I want to be. This is where I want to be making theatre like this. I might still be in London, like, and I have made theatre like that in London some amazing people, but there's nothing quite like being in a room like that where you can just, I could be completely myself. I wouldn't have to worry about whether I was talking too slang for people to understand me.
Aye.
I wouldn't have to worry about what I was saying, you know, whether I was swearing too much, whether I was doing, it was just what it was.
And were you aware of it at the time? Or was it after you thought, that was it?
No, I just walked in and I was like, this room is brilliant.
You feel you've arrived
at the time. Vicky Featherston's last play before she left to go to the Court, and meeting her has just been like, just changed the way I think about a lot of things in theatre, and she's just one of the most wonderful women I've ever met in my life, and she's given me so many opportunities. But yeah, that was strong women. You know,
and yeah, and someone else who's been hugely outspoken about sexual abuse and recent scandals and stuff like that.
Yes, can I just go and, do you know what? I can say what I say, but what, you got to speak out about these things. Mm-hmm. And if it gets you into trouble, it's like, well, right, well, you know, we can talk about that.
We can apologise.
I'm one of the, you know, I talk before I think sometimes, but I think the best to just, if we're going to, it's going to be out there, you need to talk about it and you need to not apologise for what you say. And over the last couple of years, working with people like her and Imogen Knight and working with Cora Bissett on Glasgow Girls and worked with her on another piece as well, it's just like these women are making waves and talking about shit that needs to be talked about.
It's exciting.
Everyone might not like it, but I want to be right in the middle of that with my spoon, stirring it up.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
So Glasgow Girls, is it still going? Still around?
I think so. I went back to see a production of it, which was really, really weird.
So there's other production companies putting it on, or are they
NTS and Cora's company, like they've toured it a good couple of times. It's been recast. I went back and did it at Stratford East, which was the first time it had made its way down to London. And in Stratford, like because there's so many asylum seekers that live there and so many schools, and the response was amazing. And it's gone back there since. It might have gone back twice. It's been to the Edinburgh Festival a couple of times. I went back and saw it last year or maybe the year before, and it was great to sit and watch it.
Wow.
To see another set of girls doing a really, really great show and still carrying it on. Do you know what I mean?
So did you have to bow out of it?
I did, because I got offered another job down in London.
Isn't that the way, though?
Which was lovely.
That's
nice. I didn't want to leave it. I thought it was so great. But
yeah,
it wasn't about... I knew that it'd be going for quite a long time. And I'm just like, it's just somebody else's turn to have another crack at the whip. Do you know what I mean?
When you realise something's got legs and you think, I've done my wee bit of my time.
It's time to pass it on to somebody else and who will do an equally amazing job at making sure that the... So yeah, that... I went down and did a musical at the Southwark Playhouse.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
What one?
It was called The A to Z of Mrs. P, which was a very interesting experience. I had an amazing cast full of like musical theatre royalty, like Francis Raphael and Stuart Matthew Price. There were some amazing people in it. And Izzy Sooty from Peep Show was in it.
Dobby
and Peep Show. She was the lead. It was about the woman who wrote The A to Z of London.
Oh.
Maps the Musical,
Musical. So you've made inroads in Scotland, like you said you wanted to. Then you've kind of gone back to, not back, I don't mean backwards, but you've returned to London and you're in a more commercial line again.
But did different, Southwark Playhouse, that venue is kind of off the beaten track.
So was there a conscious thing of going, wait a minute, I'm leaving Scotland again? Did you feel like you didn't want to? Did you think about moving back?
That's I felt like I'd made a stamp on what I wanted to do up here. But it was an offer, a straight up offer for a play, a new piece in London. So like, I wasn't going to turn that down.
Yeah, you grab it.
I was like, I'll grab it and I'll come back. It's not like, I think a lot of people feel, especially in this business, that when you go to London, you're in London. Is that you in London now, Don? I've been up and down from London for 10 years. When I'm up here, I'm up here. When I'm doing there, I'm doing there. I'm wherever the work is.
Yeah.
And that is that. There is no here nor there about, will I go down to London and I turn my back on Scottish theatre, or will I come up here and nobody in the West End wants me? That is ridiculous. And it's a thing that's starting to like get better. But at the time when I left to do West End stuff,
That's it.
I talk a lot with friends that have done that, like Louise McCarthy, like a lot of people, Stephen Ashfield, who have done musicals, mainstream musicals, and come back and try and chap on doors. Like, we're not in you know, boxes. You don't shut the lid in a box and it's like, that's what you are.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and especially now, people in all fields are moving about. Musicians, actor musos, spoken word poetry, everything's just a mishmash. Everything.
I got that when I did a bit of work in America about 3 years ago. I was back and forth a few times in a year. And obviously what happens is your social media tells a story, doesn't it? So people, I'd come back and people go, oh, I thought you'd be moving to America. I thought you were in America now.
I thought you were in Broadway now, and that's
it. And actually, you know what, really, I did a few Irish dancey gigs where I play music for Irish dancing. And for a lot of them, you might as well be in Coatbridge because it's a church hall or a school hall or a convention centre or a sports hall, a gym someplace. And, you know, you say you're going to Chicago, but you're not really. You're landing in Chicago.
And then driving 4 hours out of Chicago.
Exactly. To the Coatbridge of Illinois, believe me. So then people go, oh, you're in America. Yeah, whatever. I mean, it's a gig, isn't it?
You're standing there playing, going, this is dead like Coatbridge Town Hall. Have you ever been to Coatbridge?
It doesn't feel like America at all to me. I don't feel like I've hit the heights at all.
That's it.
But you're right, that's you pigeonholed, isn't it? So then that's not too long though, the Southwark Playhouse. You're not in that for a year.
Nah, it was 5 months, if that. And then I met Johnny McKnight.
And that's where your life began.
That's where my life began. When you're listening to this, Johnny boy, he made me who I am. When I win my Oscar finally, he'll be the only person, I think.
The only person, quite right.
This is a really funny story, actually. I wanted to audition for Panto. I'd never done Panto before. I'd done a little bit of Amdram Panto, having a laugh with the Kirky Players.
Oh, yeah.
Where I realised that me and Martin McCormick used to do Panto together as kids.
Really?
And we didn't notice that until we played Beauty and the Beast together. And he was like, are you and Kirky Players? I was like, yes. And we realised that we'd actually been doing it like when we were 10 and he was like 15. Anyway, I wanted to be in Panto and I was like, who does Panto up here? And found out quite quickly who were the main theatres that did it and kind of got my oar in and was like, I'd love to audition for those. And I didn't know Johnny, and Johnny had come to see me in Glasgow Girls, and so I'd tried to get an audition and he was like, yeah, of course, I'll see her. But I was in London at the time and I was working in London. I don't know whether I was still in. Maybe I did Southwark Playhouse after I did Panto. I think I did, actually. I think I did Panto first and then left to do the Southwark Playhouse and came back up. But I was working anyway. I was teaching and I couldn't get out of teaching. And my agent called me and was like, no problem. It's not a problem that he can't see you. He said he'll see you for the next thing. And I was like, nah, I want an audition for this man. So I went, and this was like 5 years ago, I was like, can they Skype me? And my agent went, let me put that to him. And they went, aye. So I stood in my living room, no word did I lie, in my living room, and I've got I used to have like a 24-hour bus stop outside the front of me, so literally outside the front of my flat.
Right.
So like you could hear the shh, beep, 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 shh. And I stood in my living room and piled my laptop on top of about 20 books.
So it was the right height.
On a table, it was the right height. And pressed hello, and there was Alan Penman, Karen Martin-Young, Johnny McKnight, all sitting in a row. I'd never met any of these people before in my life. God. And I was like, hiya! And they were like, hi, Dylan, how you doing?
That's insane.
That's mental. And I sang like an Ed Sheeran song and an Adele song. And was like, sorry, that's the bus, just stop and hold on. Beep, beep. And I sang two songs to them over a Skype audition. And then they got back to me and were like, can you come up to Scotland and audition for a recall for Beauty and the Beast? And I was like, yeah. And I got it. And I was like, that's hilarious that this is what's happened for me to get this job. And meeting those people and doing that job with some of they're my best friends. Like, there's some people that in there that I hold very, very high in my life and I love very dearly. And that was when I fully kind of was like, okay, there's a lot of talent in this place and I want to be working with these people all the time.
There's amazing people. Was that McRobert?
Yeah, McRobert, Robbie Jack. Tremendous. You know, Hetland McAlpine, Johnny McKnight, you know, Michelle Gallagher, all these, Joe Freer, Mark McCormick. I'm trying to think of who else I've no mentioned because they'll get raging at me. And they'll be
Darren.
Like, you didn't? I've known him since I was like 15 years old from Knightswoods, but I've never worked with him properly.
Oh, you went to Knightswood with Darren,
I did, yeah. Okay. He's a year above me. 2 years above me, sorry. But yeah.
So you're in about it.
In about it. Really enjoying myself. I did that for 4 years, Panto.
you kept coming back.
I kept coming back. I was like,
and went down and did other things in between. And
Well, that's when Our Ladies of Perpetual Succor happened.
Right. Okay.
500,000 years of my life have been spent doing that play.
Amazing.
Which is amazing.
Had it ever, to jump to that, did it change much over the time that you did it? Did it evolve, or was it kind of set when you started?
We created it, so it was...
But once you created it, it was kind of set
yeah,
then?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Kind of set. We've had different girls play different parts. It hasn't been the same girls that has happened throughout the 3 years that I've done it.
Were you always in it?
Aye.
How many shows did you do? Did you ever count?
Not too many.
I would count. I always count.
I'm going to ask Caroline, actually, Caroline Diego, who was in it with me.
She'd know.
She's good at stuff like that, so I'll ask.
That's we'll interesting.
Back to other people that are gagging to know.
Yeah, everyone's waiting. Tweet that.
But we opened and did a tour and then did the live theatre in Newcastle mm-hmm. for like 5 weeks because Lee Hall, who wrote Billy Elliot and everything, was the writer of it. He adapted it.
Of course, yeah.
And then after that, I came back up and did Panto. And then went back again and did the second run of it, which was another quite short tour, but English now, going mm-hmm. down to England and going round. And then America, Connecticut.
Goodness.
We did that for like 3 weeks. And then we came down and did a run at the Dorfman for 2 months at the National.
Gorgeous.
And then we went to Australia, to Melbourne. And I was just like, this is getting freaking out. This is amazing, the fact that I get to travel to these places and do these things. And again, Vicky Featherston, like, she gave me the opportunity to do it. National mm-hmm. Theatre Scotland, they gave me another opportunity, and it was, and still is, one of the most amazing parts I've ever played.
Mm.
Just being able to, if I'd have known when I was 17, going to GSA, worried about the fact that I couldn't sing high, or couldn't belt all those notes, knowing that I was playing a part where I could be a lead character, singing the way I want to sing, and speaking these, I think it's an amazing story, the way I want to do it.
Using what you've got.
Using what I've got to do what I want, and
well,
that's it.
Game,
I would have been like, that's literally like my wish come true, mm-hmm. all my wishes. And then I came back up, did another year of Panto, got my Scottish fill,
excellent.
Got all my pals, and then I went back down not this year,
uh-huh.
to do 6 months in the West End, and we did a West End run.
Did well out of Our Ladies, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Was there a time at the end of the West End run where you, did it feel like it was over?
Yeah.
Did anyone say like, so this will probably be it?
Well, no, because it's never really it with something that's...
You think it might come back?
Something. It might do.
Right.
I think it should.
Mm-hmm.
But...
It's still life, innit?
I mean, it just depends, I guess, but...
Aye.
Touring, it's another one of those, it's very, you know, got the gift that Glasgow Girls gives as well. It's that whole thing of a group of girls telling a story that needs to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, it doesn't have to be played by the exact same people. As long as you've got, and there is plenty of fantastic working class actresses up here and down there that live there.
Totally,
that would be brilliant. It's amazing. It's been an amazing vehicle for me
mm-hmm.
to be able to do a Scottish piece made by a Scottish company with Scottish women and put it on in the West End. Like, that just blew my mind.
It's a biggie.
It's a big one. And amazing. Like, I've loved it. I owe a lot to my... To my career and what I'm doing to that show, because mm-hmm. it the exposure was pretty awesome.
Do you owe your part in Pinocchio to that as well, do you think?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I owe my part in Pinocchio down to John Tiffany and the National Theatre Scotland. And
yeah, because of course, John, when you started working at the NTS, John was still there.
Yeah, he was just about to leave.
Right, so that was a good time to start there.
Great, yeah. And great piece to be in and to... be watched in, I guess, by people, because you're like, this is right up my street. This is exactly what I want to be doing. So
you're showing all your core skills.
Mm-hmm.
So did John ask for you for Pinocchio?
Yes.
Holy moly, that's nice.
It's lovely.
So tell me about it. Tell us about it, Pinocchio.
Pinocchio.
You were telling me earlier a little bit about how the Disney conversation went and how the music was handed over and adapted and so on. It sounds really interesting.
It's amazing. Like, again, having the beauty of a long rehearsal process to be able to create something new.
Yeah.
We knew it wasn't going to be a Shrek or an Aladdin. It's not a mainstream commercial musical that's going out with the glitter and all that.
Yeah.
All that jazz. It's the National have been really, really specific about the fact, and John as well, John Tiffany and Stephen Hoggart, have been very, very specific about wanting to make it about the story. It's a really, really, really classical. You'd be really like surprised if you came to see it, how different it is to what everyone's expecting. It's mm-hmm. really bare, very classical. And we do everything with 12-foot puppets. So
right, yeah.
Geppetto, Stromboli, the Blue Fairy, the Coachman are all played by these massive puppets.
So it's massive. Multiple people operating them?
Yeah, one on each arm, and then mm-hmm. there's no legs, so there's a pole for the body.
Oh, right.
Someone holding the body, and then the person that plays the part holds the head and speaks with the head.
Gosh.
So it's a really beautiful thing. They were really, really adamant. It's such a beautiful story. Like, I just mm-hmm. watched the film and was like, I remember being scared rotten by that, you know.
The whole thing, I mean, it really gets you.
It really gets you.
I remember vividly watching it when I was a kid. Yeah. Loved it. I love the music.
And I'm playing Lampy, who's the kid that gets turned into a donkey. Mm-hmm. So that meets him with a cigar at Pleasure Island.
Yep.
And like, John was like, it's a girl in our production, as mm-hmm. is Jiminy Cricket, played by a girl. Because mm-hmm. Disney at that time, it's just all men. Yeah. Men, men, men. And the lassies are fairies or princesses. But
yeah,
now,
of course, yeah.
It's amazing that John and Stephen were like, nah. No chance. And Dennis Kelly's written it, so it's really, really current. It's
oh, that's
really,
really right. Cool. Dennis Kelly wrote the book.
But being able to play it, and he was like, I want her Scottish. I want her Glaswegian, man. Give it, go full pelt. So some people are just like, you were in Our Lady's Perpetual Sucker, weren't you? Because it's basically just the same character.
That same voice, of course.
That same working class Glaswegian accent. The yeah. only Scottish person in the company.
How many people are in it?
22.
And a band, an orchestra?
An orchestra of 16.
Gosh, must be
Martin Lowe, who did the music for Our Ladies. I thought that he couldn't kind of like get any better, because yeah. Our Ladies' music was some of the most extreme and beautiful stuff I've ever heard in my life. Mm-hmm. This is just out of this world. It's like just don't shut your eyes, because you'll miss us doing our fancy stuff on stage. Yeah. But like, if you close your eyes at the Sitz Probe, I just could not believe what I was hearing. You feel like you've been enveloped by Disney. It's like this, just in a bubble of, we've got a harp player, we've got string section, we've got brass, we've got massive percussion, we've got pianos everywhere. It's just stunning, stunning, beautiful stuff. And amazing to be part of something that's like Disney are involved in.
Yeah.
It's not what everyone's expecting. It's something, a new take on a classic.
Have you had much chat from people that have seen it? People that you didn't know? Do you meet people...
Yeah,
stage door,
yeah.
What do they say? What is the reaction?
People love it. It's quite dark, so like not what the National, I guess, usually go for, because it's the family show.
Yeah.
It's the Christmas show, you know what I mean? And from doing Panto, you're like, I know what a Panto audience are like.
Yeah.
The Christmas audience at the National are very, very different, obviously, but like,
yeah, of course.
They still come for a laugh and a good time, whereas this isn't massively all about a laugh and a good time. My character gets, you know, I get to do all the fun, and there's mm-hmm. puppets and Jiminy Cricket, and there's magic
yep.
from Jamie Harrison, who did Harry Potter.
Of course.
Amazing, from Vox Mortis. But there's like a really, really beautiful story throughout, and it's really, really dark, scary sometimes.
Well, it is a dark story, but that's yeah. true of so much stuff that's been Disneyfied, if you like, mm-hmm. that we learn to just accept. Like the way the Ugly Sisters and the stepmother treated Cinderella
yeah.
is horrid. And actually, when you take it out of the Disney context, you go, that is pretty dark.
Bad,
and fairy
yeah.
tales are.
Yeah, they are.
But it's a way older story than Disney, of mm. course.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of gone back to its roots, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so cool.
It's kind of just, it's that whole thing about everything, but like boils down to wanting to fit in and wanting to be loved.
Yeah.
And I think it's got a really beautiful heart at the end of it. So audience members are young and old, so... It's made for around 8-year-olds. We've had kids a little bit younger, braver kids, younger kids,
yeah.
loving it. You can see them sitting in those front two rows going, oh, you know, looking at, we've got like flames flying. We've yeah. got different, all the amazing thing. People kind of appearing from nowhere.
Yeah.
All that kind of, oh, and we did a full school show, which we've only done twice.
Right.
Now, coming from Panto, you're like, you know what the 10 o'clock shows are like. You're
That's
expecting
what you
that.
Do.
When you're standing side stage at the Littleton Theatre at the National, you're not expecting the screaming
yeah, yeah.
of the Panto. And we came out for the first 5 minutes of Pinocchio and they were like, yeah, screaming. And I was like, this is amazing. It's amazing to get that same reaction that
Takes
you get
you back.
At the McBob when you're going out to play those 10 o'clock shows.
So this is the first year you've not done McBob in that wee run then?
Yeah.
Was that sad?
It was really sad. But yeah. I went back and watched it and it was amazing.
Yeah.
The things, you know, all these things run with... whether we're there or not. And it's just amazing that...
That's the lesson though, isn't it?
There's really Johnny writes a really current, up-to-date, funky, cool pantomime, and it's one of the best in Scotland. That's why he is one of the best in Scotland.
He
and
is.
I just think that I was really blessed to be able to, you know, get cracking with something that was so current and up my street. And I went back to watch it, and everybody's so talented, and like, you know, it was a good laugh to be able to sit on the other side and enjoy
myself. You don't grudge
myself.
It when people are good and when people, you know what I mean?
Mm.
You just go, it's nice to see people doing well.
Absolutely.
I always think that's such a joy. So you've got a wee bit more of Pinocchio still to do.
Yeah.
But you've stolen some days off. But you're not out of the show, are you, just now? The show is not
off.
On.
Yeah, we're in rep with Network. And it's amazing at the National that they do that changeover.
Yeah.
They have both of those sets. So when I'm walking backstage to get to the other side, then full Network stage is set. It's just back there, just there, just sitting, and it's glory.
The scale is tremendous.
And they just kind of move yours to the side and chuck it down. I'm sure it's a lot more technical than that.
Like, oh, you could do it. What do you do? Move it to the
just
side?
Push that to the front? Take that Bryan Cranston seat and just put it right at the front.
Have you met him?
Like, said hello in the canteen.
So, oh my goodness.
Very lightly.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing, like, being able to walk in that building. There's just people everywhere.
Amazing.
And because it is it's a building that has three different theatres in it, and there's always two things in rep and four shows rehearsing.
Yeah.
So the people that are walking in and out of that place are just, you know,
not just the people that are in it just now, but there's people that are going to be in shows.
It's a total revolving door of people. It's a massive building that makes massive things happen.
Amazing.
Very cool.
And that's, you're back now. That's your second time there, so...
That's it.
Yeah, you can't leave once you...
Oh,
a couple of times, that's you. You're in with it.
As long as they've got
furniture.
If I'm like, if they get any working class chavvy Glaswegian lassies in this...
Because that is your niche now, you see.
Oh, I need to play something else, or else people start thinking that I'm just doing the same thing, but I don't think I can play anything else.
You can, but do you know what happens? I've got that with playing age. I've done so many 17-year-old
Mate,
cheeky
same.
Boys.
Teenagers, aye.
And I'm like, lads, I'm 32.
But you don't want to take that away, because as long as you're looking young...
it would be crazy to complain about it, and yet
you've got a bit of facial hair now, so you're all right.
Just for now, I mean...
I can't grow my facial hair.
No, that's not an option for you, maybe, so much.
Just be like, I want to play an older woman, so I'm just going to get a beard in the go and see.
Just very light, just the hint of it. I've only got facial hair because I'm in between public appearance type jobs. I'm writing, so I figure I can do what I want. So it's just a control issue. I'm like, I'll do that then, because no one can tell me I'm not doing it. I don't know, even know if I like it. I'm just like, I'm doing it because I can.
Go away. You'll be playing Hamlet before you know it.
That's it. Nobody can tell me how I'm getting my hair cut. It's all good.
That's so weird, isn't it? Being able to just feel that freedom. I've just been like, nobody's going to tell me what I need to wear, what makeup I need to wear, what colour my hair's going to be, how long it's going to be.
What a life that you do get told that, though. But then do you ever find when you're off... You don't have your schedule, you don't have a company manager telling you where you need to be, and you go, what did I do?
Well, you're just like,
do you feel lost when you don't work?
In the morning. I don't know. I feel like I've been really, really busy over the last couple of years, always shooting, you know, up there, doing there,
You've
here.
Had a good run, yeah.
I've had a really, really good couple of years, but yeah, you're right. Like, I've come up and for the first 2 days, I was like, okay,
yeah.
Right, I'll just clean the flat and then I'll make my dinner.
It's an adjustment, right?
It's really great. They always say that, don't they? The first way to make an actor moan is to give them a job. Like,
totally, yeah.
I'm moaning when I'm in work and I'm moaning when I'm out of work. But I am really grateful.
Yeah.
I love it.
Thank you for coming to talk to me, despite having no time.
Thanks for having me.
You can go and see your granny now.
Yes.
There you are, Dawn Sivray, off to see her granny. And it's great that she had her, you know, her limited time in Glasgow, and she chose to spend an hour of it in my wee studio. I'm very pleased about that. So do drop me a line if you want to talk about anything you've heard on the show, this episode or any others, or you want to make any suggestions for future episodes, brian@puttingittogethercast.com. And everything's there on the website, puttingittogethercast.com. All the previous episodes, and we've got a news page, and there's a contact page and things, so if you want to get in touch through the website, you can do that as well. And if you're listening on any other platform, do take a few seconds to subscribe and give me a wee rating, because it does make a big difference, and it doesn't take very long. If you know someone who would like the show, then please do tell them about it. And also a big thanks to my web and logo designers, purplepandamedia.com. So there you go. Dawn Sevright and me this week, and who knows who it's going to be next week. They just keep on coming. I've got a few in the can that I'm really excited about, and then once I get my head a little bit above water with the show that I'm working on, the two shows that I'm working on, then I'll have people into the studio again and continue. But they just keep coming. So I'm going to leave it at that because there's lots to be done. And next week we'll be back, same time, same place. Thank you so much for being part of it. Thank you for all the lovely comments and feedback. I hope you have a great week. And until next time, cheerio now.